I want to start by asking you a question. How many of you have gardened at some point in your life? Okay, so just about everybody. How many of you have gardens right now? Okay, again, just about everybody. I want to ask you a question going off of that. If you knew at the beginning of the planting season that when at the end of the harvest only 25% of what you planted was going to survive, would you still plant everything you initially intended to plant? If you knew at the beginning of the year that 3/4 of the stuff was going to either not grow or make it to the harvest, would you still plant that all? I want you to think about that as we move forward into our text for today. I really like this story because there's just so much that we can pull out of it. This is it's a very rich text. We have Jesus going out to the seaside, and he's talking to the crowd. He's talking to the crowd about many different things. He's talking to them in parables, which, as we know, are stories that help them understand the kingdom of God. Jesus uses parables because he's able to relate to them in things that make sense to them in their community. If we look at the original Greek and what the word parable means, it literally means to throw alongside. And how relevant is that for our story today and the story of the sower? I'm picturing Jesus, and I want you to picture him with me, going out to the seaside and getting onto a boat, which for that time was probably like a makeshift pulpit, because as he's on this boat, his voice is going to carry across the water. And he says to the crowd, he says, "Listen. Anyone who has ears, listen. A sower went out to sow seeds." Stanley P. Saunders, one of my go-to theologians this summer, says this: "Let anyone who has ears listen suggests a literal hearing of the parable is not the same as listening in order to understand. If we presume that Jesus' audience was aware that seeds, fields, and harvest were common images associated with God's blessing and judgment of Israel, that Jesus understood his own ministry as being about gathering and harvest, then the story would surely have resonated as more than a simple description of vagaries of agrarian life." So, as we look at this story, we are going to work on the deeper meaning of what Jesus intended for this particular message. This farmer goes out and sows seeds, and as he does so, the seeds fall onto 4 different types of ground. We have the path, we have the rocky soil, we have the soil with many thorns, and then we have what they call the good soil. And typically when people reflect on this text, they tend to focus on the different kinds of soil and how we can relate to that, what kind of soil we are in our particular life. And although I think that's important, today we're going to focus on the larger picture. And not just the soil, but who is sowing these seeds? And what is his purpose behind that? So let's jump back to that original question. If you knew that only 25% of your plants were going to make it to the harvest, would you still put in all of that work and effort? Now, just about everybody raised their hand when I asked the question of if you've had a garden or if you have a garden right now. And you know how much work goes into planting. You have to organize. You have to decide where you're going to plant certain things. You have to decide what time of year you're going to plant so you have the desired outcome. There are things that need to take place at a particular time of year, and certain kind of care. Some plants need a certain amount of sun. Some plants need a certain amount of water. And the beauty of God's story and this parable is that God's method for sowing is absolutely nothing like our method of planting. Where we can spend so much time trying to figure out when to plant seeds so they don't freeze here in Wisconsin, God just lavishly throws the seeds and doesn't even seem to care where they fall, whether it's the good soil or the thorny ground. The sower is throwing seeds wildly into the air with the possibility of falling onto any kind of soil, much like God's mercy and the mercy that he shows to all of humanity. And isn't that how the kingdom of heaven is described? With lavish abundance for all? Remember how I said the Greek interpretation of the word parable is to throw alongside. Well, Jesus is going to throw alongside these seeds through the teachings of his parables to the disciples and to the crowd. It is our choice then to decide what kind of soil we want to be. For there seems to be plenty of seed to go around, but depending on the soil depends on how we hear that word. I like this because there aren't any pre-assumptions about the harvest. The goal was not to go out for Jesus and plant seeds on the particularly good soil in a nice, neat rows. But he goes out and he just throws the seeds abundantly, and accepting that they are going to land where they land. Robert Stevenson says, "Don't judge a harvest based on what you reap, but the seeds that you plant." So it's not necessarily about the harvest at the end of the day, but the intentions behind it and why you were planting in the first place. You know the saying, you reap what you sow? That luckily doesn't apply to God here. Why? Because God sows so much. The seeds that he shares he's expecting that some are going to fall on closed ears. So let's talk about, for a second, the different types of soil that we have. As I've mentioned, and as the text suggests, there are four different kinds of soils that the seed can land upon. Four different ways that we can respond to the seed and the word that is being shared through the gospel. And the first one is the path. The birds come and they eat the seeds that fall in the path. Or as in verse 9 it says, the evil one comes and snatches away what is sown in the heart. These types of people are at the mercy of new creation. Think about the latest fashion or the newest technology. These kinds of things can distract us from where our focus should be on. I was listening to the radio on my way to Dun Brothers this past week as I was going to work on sermon prep, and the guys on the radio were talking about how our society today is so focused on technology that most people don't even know how to function without it. And how sad is that? How true is it for our daily life? I know for myself personally, I find myself needing to check Facebook so often, or I feel the need to respond to people's messages. And I ask myself, too, when I say, are we willing to respond as quickly to God's message? Are we willing to check God's timeline as often as we should be? So then we're going to move to the rocky ground. This is where there is not a lot of soil. The seeds sprout up quickly because they have no depth. And because there is no depth, they don't last very long. When you don't create strong roots in your faith, it is hard to continue with that initial fire and passion. There are two potential reasons that this can happen. And the first one is because of pride. And so when we have pride in our faith, there tends to be an idea that we know everything or we don't need to learn anything new, which goes into the second thing, the lack of humility and the fear of change. So making this commitment to be a good soil requires nurturing and care. Are you watering your faith as much as you should be? Are you giving your faith the sunlight that it needs to grow? If we close the door to learning new things in relationship to God, we are closing that door to the possibility of learning and growing new things in the faith. The third type of soil is the soil with the thorns. And these thorns can choke any other plants that try and grow in the same garden. These are the people who hear the word, but let the cares of the world overpower their desire to follow the word. You may hear people that say, oh, I'm too busy to have a set prayer life, or I don't have enough time to follow that or to volunteer for that fundraiser you've been asking help for. The important things tend to be crowded out by the cares of society. However, the same problem can arise by focusing too much on doing good for the wrong reasons that you fail to nurture your relationship with God. Stanley Hauerwas talks about this in terms of wealth and how we prioritize our money and our possessions. He says, "The church in America simply is not a soil capable of growing deep roots. It may seem odd that wealth makes it possible to grow the word. Wealth, we assume, should create the power necessary to do much good. But wealth stills the imagination because we are not forced, as the disciples of Jesus were forced, to be an alternative to the world that only necessity can create. Possessed by our possessions, we desire to act in the world, often on behalf of the poor, without having to lose our possessions. Possessed by our possessions. Wow. Are our possessions becoming the weeds that chokes the life out of where we should be? Is our wealth or our desire for money becoming the weeds in our life that choke us from what we should be doing? The last type of soil that we see is what they call the good soil. And as I thought about that, I couldn't help but go back to Genesis and think about the creation story when God calls something good. You know, the word good is used so nonchalantly in our society today, so simplistically. However, when you put it in this context, there's something so full about it that you are good and it's complete with God. The good soil has three different things that we should strive for then as we are striving to be good soil. And those are that we would hear the word, the seeds that are being planted. And because we hear the word, we should be able to understand it. And then having understood the word, you can bear fruit, which will in turn be able to plant those seeds and share that with other people. I think we all have the ability to be different kinds of soil depending on the day. I know for myself, there are days when I get distracted by the things that I should be doing, and I need to remind myself that I need to bring my attention back to where it should be, and that is in God. That's not always easily done, is it? The Sunshine Gals are reading a really good book right now. It's called Sacred Pathways. And this book talks about the different paths that we can take in order to fill ourselves spiritually, to connect with God. And this past chapter talked about the different senses and how we connect to worship through different senses. And I really like that because it calls us to be intentional about our time of worship. And when you recognize what you can connect to, you can be intentional about creating that space of worship for yourself. I know for myself personally, I connect to music. And so the time of worship and when we're singing together is when I find myself closest to God. And it's funny how then throughout the week, I can be intentional about singing those same songs that are sung on Sunday morning. And I can feel that connectedness to God. So what are the things that spiritually fill you? Recognize those things and allow yourself to be open like the good soil, to receive the seeds that God is so lavishly sharing through scripture and through interactions of our daily life. However, as we strive to be this good soil, it's important to remember that there's something much greater, that we believe in a God who is so lavishly sharing those seeds, and there's so much bounty to go around for all. Barbara Brown Taylor was my inspiration for today when I read her thoughts on this particular text. She says, what if it's not about our own successes and failures? So what if it's not about the different types of soil, or the birds and the rocks and the thorns, but about the extravagance of a sower who flings seed everywhere, wastes it with holy abandon, confident that there is enough seed to go around and that there is plenty, and that when the harvest comes in at last, it will fill every barn in the neighborhood to the rafters. How true is that? God is truly abundant and works in extraordinary ways. So what do we do about those things? We go back to that three-step pattern from being good soil, and that if we become the good soil, we hear the word that it should bring forth good seed, we may be able to take those lessons that Jesus shares with the disciples and share that with other people. Oscar Wilde says that where there is no extravagance, there is no love, and where there is no love, there is no understanding. So may the seeds that fall into your heart open and burst extravagantly. Let that love pour out so we can also sow seeds to other people. Thomas Long, another one of my go-to theologians this summer, said this as his message to the church. The message to the church is that the gift of a great harvest awaits them, that when the kingdom of heaven comes in power and the discipleship of the people of God allows fragile and at peril in the world, will be magnified by the generosity of God into a fruitful, extravagant, and altogether gracious yield. Therefore, the church is called to waste itself, to throw grace around like there is no tomorrow, precisely because there is a tomorrow, and it belongs to God. So what is our purpose? That we sow seeds. No matter where it falls, there will be a harvest. You may not always know when or where or why, but when you are willing to be extravagant with your sowing, as God was, there will be a harvest. So I'm going to ask you that question again. If you knew that 3/4 of your seeds were not going to come to the end of the harvest at the end of the year, would you still do all the work required to have that garden? Would you still be willing to plant all of those seeds? Would you still be willing to lavishly throw the seeds as Jesus did? Please pray with me.